I'm very glad to be here. I appreciate the organisers inviting someone not being part of the PF process, but this is a very interesting conference for me to attend. Putting Freewheel in the titles may be a bit silly. Physical Reviews told me to take it out of the title of the papers. It'll be appearing. I'll be talking about some work that's coming out in Physical Review Editors and Physical Review A early next year. So I'm really going to be looking at, we know equality violation means we have to give up something that may be dear to our classical hearts if we want to understand quantum mechanics. And so I thought it would be an interesting exercise to try and quantify how much of each, how much determinism we might have to give up. And if we give up that much determinism, or if we give up a little less determinism, how much no signaling will we have to give up to compensate to achieve whatever violation of the no inequalities we're trying to model. So that's the first part, plausible assumptions. These no inequalities, we've got to give something up. And I'll try and be non-biased as to what we might give up. I'll leave that more about a discussion. I'll just try and measure, show how you can measure some things. And you get sort of complementarity relations between the amounts of indeterminism, no singling, and lack of free will, if you like, that you have to give up. And I'll also talk about a singlet state model that's quite interesting. It's no singling and deterministic, but you have to give up some measurement independence or free will, or introduce some retrocausality. There's various ways, but I'll explain what I mean as we go on. So at the top, it's just a fairly standard picture, setting some notation. Now it measures, makes a measurement setting X, and she gets an outcome A. Bob measures, makes a measurement setting Y. His detector has that measurement setting, gets an outcome B. And you've got some sort of source that sets everything off. So you make many runs and you collect some statistics. Let's try this here. And you want to model those statistics. And the way you normally do it, I talk about underlying information and underlying variables because they're not necessarily hidden. Our information might just be a quantum density operator, for example. But I guess mostly I'm thinking about the good old lambda that are called hidden variables. So you postulate the existence of some parameter lambda. Bayes' theorem tells us, well, there should be some joint distribution for a given pair of measurement settings of the outcomes and lambda. And then we don't know what lambda is, at least it's not what we're measuring. What we're measuring is some sort of average over lambda, so we just integrate. And so there's an example down the bottom where a quantum model of correlations will replace lambda by density operator in some quantum space. And our measurements, the measurement setting X might denote spin in a small x direction. So, and all the way through, it's probably best for simplicity to think of this is 2 qubits on its spin, and which we can measure in various directions and get results plus or minus one. And so if we know the underlying variable rho, we can calculate with the appropriate projection operators for spin up and spin down in the x and y directions. We've just fitting these into our models. We may know the density operator to be some rho s, s standing for source. So there's various plausible assumptions, which I think most of you will be very familiar with, and these plausible assumptions are of interest because they lead to Bell inequalities. At the top, I've just rewritten the correlation model that we've got. It's reasonably general at the moment. And the assumptions for such models fall into two things: assumptions about the joint outcomes given this underlying information, and also this distribution over the variable characterizing the information. It's all for a given set of, all for a given pair of measurement settings. So determinism is pretty easy. It's just the property that all, once we know, if we did know lambda, we know everything about the outcomes. We have to know the measurement settings, of course, as well. And no singling, just the underlying marginals are independent of distant measurement settings. And again, it's a property of this part of our model. I guess I'd like to say it's quite easy to show that something might be worried with is factorisability. If I'm talking about Bell inequalities, this might seem very general. But the existence of a model that satisfies these two properties, if such a model exists, it exists if and only if a model satisfying factorisability conditions exist. Is that it?
Howard has a hand up. I think it's the same question.
Yeah, no signaling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who had a hand up first?
I think you had
a hand up.
It's conditional on that. Right, no signaling. It should be conditioned on the things you know about, the X and Y, but not lambda. If you put lambda, then that's
just saying no signaling is not a good name for this concept because.
It's the standard name.
No,
the standard name is parameter independence.
Yeah, it's Jared and Shimley.
No signaling is a bad name because, and signaling is an observer level description of things. Like one, the Alice signals Bob, but Alice doesn't have access to language.
Okay, yes, I'm talking about the model being no signaling here, not the observable correlations. All right, so think of it as parameter independence, then it's totally equivalent. I think of them as the same. But your words are important. Okay, and then the other thing, which here I call measurement independence, which is probably best understood in this form, that if there's a distribution of possible measurement settings, it's uncorrelated with the distribution of the underlying variable. It can also be written in various conditional probability forms. Essentially, this lambda, its distribution doesn't depend on what particular measurement settings you choose. And so, let's go on. All right, and again, everyone here, I think, would be familiar with you. If you assume there's a model satisfying those three properties, and the outcomes are labeled by plus or minus one, and we're considering just two possible measurement settings for Alice, two possible measurement settings for Bob, you get the Bell, Clausewitz, Shimley, Hull inequality. And quantum mechanics can violate that, and PR boxes can violate it by even more. So we have to give up at least one of these assumptions in a model of this type. I'm not going to talk about which one we might give up. We probably all have our own individual preferences. I'm going to talk about by how much you need to give up these assumptions. And to do that, we have to be able to measure them in some way. And the measures, I'll spend a little time talking about these. To be able to get, I was chosen these measures, partly they're fairly easy to understand, but also partly they lead to an analytic sort of solution for the problem I'm trying to solve. So there are other measures you could use. So the determinism just says that all your marginal probabilities, and although I've only written in Alice's marginal probabilities here, there's a similar condition for Bob's. If the theory model was deterministic, you'd be confined to 0 and 1 for all your marginal probabilities. So we just said our amount of indeterminism is, in a sense, the smallest number such you can find the two subintervals very close to 0 and 1. This degree I can range all the way up to a half, basically. And obviously, if it's zero, you're confined to a deterministic model. So we let our model be possibly fuzzy to some degree. The amount of singling, I don't know what you'd call if you had parameter dependence, but we'll call it singling for the model rather than for the observed correlations. It's probably easy to look at the picture. Alice is just going to have a fixed measurement setting X. And Y can, Bob can choose a measurement setting to be Y or Y prime. Depending on what he does, they then make a run of measurements and get out a relative frequency close to P or P plus S. So the marginal probability may shift. The amount of signaling is just the largest amount of signaling possible in the model in that way. I guess I could also mention briefly, you can also characterise, you'll note that there's a natural entropy associated with the degree of indeterminism. It's just the Shannon entropy of I, probability I. You can also have an amount of communication information, if you like, communicated information based on this, which I won't bother defining, but it's a function of S, a minimum amount of information you can communicate, if you could fix lambda. And then the amount of measurement dependence. This concerns the other part, the distribution of the underlying variable. And essentially you can see this is a distance measure between the two distributions. So if no matter what the measurement settings are, you have the same distribution of lambda, this will just vanish and you'll have a measurement dependence of zero. But if these things don't overlap at all, which is the situation I show here, this quantity will be as large as 2. And you can imagine if it is 2, suppose you've got some value for your underlying variable lambda, say in here, it's not possible for this measurement setting to be realised, x and y, because the probability of lambda having this value for that measurement setting is 0. And so when n equals 2, more generally, Alice and Bob, in a sense, have no free choice between these two measurement settings. At most, only one of those measurement settings is possible due to the correlation between the source and the settings. So in that sense, a high value of M, you could think of as a low value of the experimental free will available. You could also talk about models like this, where M is non-zero, allows for retrocausal models, which I know is of a lot of interest to some of the people here as well. Okay, so it's important that you can measure these things in some way. And as I say, I did choose the measure so that I'll be able to get some results in an easy way. And I haven't really written down the main results, but basically, if your model now has got a certain amount of indeterminism, parameter dependence, and measurement dependence, then you can work out what the new upper bounds are allowed for such a model, and you get a function, the ISM. Hello, Michelle.
Yeah, sorry, in your last slide, so it seems that the definition of the indeterminism and the signaling the probability the P seems different, because if the definition of this formula for signaling and indeterminism is the same, then determinism will imply no signaling condition.
You see, yes, there's a connection. I think I see what you're getting at. There's a relation between this. Yes, that's right. So if there's signaling, the signaling has to either give you a probability shift within a sub-interval or jump from one sub-interval to the other.
Determinism should not prohibit the signaling in principle, because we can have the
distance
like in Bohm's theory.
Now, I'm not sure I understand that. So indeterminism, if it was zero, you can still have signaling because you have a probability shift that jumps you from zero to one and one to zero. If indeterminism is maximum, it's a half, you can have any degree of signaling at all. So there is some connection. The amount of signaling is constrained by the amount of
the probability equals to zero, and the signaling will be the equation will be also equal to zero.
Now, well, maybe we can talk about it after. These are the smallest possible number, and these are the smallest possible numbers. So this doesn't equal this. I'm talking about minimizing or maximizing overall settings and outcomes. They have to all satisfy that. All right, so the interesting thing is you can get a function BISM for any model with a given degree of relaxation of these constraints, and that's why I call it a relaxed Bell inequality. And this function ranges between 2 and 4, and you recover the normal inequality when everything is zero. When it's not zero, you always violate the inequality. And I haven't written down the form, except to take another slide, and there's only so much time. It's not too messy. The important thing is that if there's a predicted violation or a measured violation that's greater than 2, that tells us if we want some model, and that tells us, of course, we can't have all three assumptions that are used in the Bell inequalities. But this tells us a little more. It says, well, in fact, you've got to introduce degrees of indeterminism, signaling in measurement, in such that this function is greater than the observed violation or equal to it. And as an example, if you want a model that explains the Singlet state experiment with the optimal settings that give you a violation of 2 root 2, these are AND OR conditions. You have to have at least 20% indeterminism in your model to violate the Bell inequality by that much. Or a probability shift, a signaling shift of at least 60% in probability. Or this quantity has to be at least 0.28. Remember, it's maximum 2 for any underlying model. So that's one result. And for any violation, you get similar constraints. That was for the case where Alice and Bob, when you're talking about violating the Bell, Clauser, Hall, and Chimney Hall inequality, you're talking about Alice having 2 possible spin directions she can measure, and the same with Bob. It's harder, of course, to model all spin correlations on Singlet state, and I'm only talking about spin correlations, not PABMs, but that's a harder job, and you get much stronger constraints. So you want to model Alice and Bob can now choose to measure in any direction at all, and we're going to have to relax our degrees of our determinism and parameter independence and measurement independence to allow that to be possible. And so there's a couple of results that we already know, and that is if you have parameter independence and measurement independence, so S and M is 0, we don't relax those. In fact, Cyril Brandt said in the audience here, proved a strong result, which just a corollary of it is any model of the Singlet state that can model all spin correlations correctly has to have maximum indeterminism. In fact, he proved a stronger result. The spin up, no matter what the model is, the probability of spin up in the model, given the underlying variable, is a half, equals the probability of spin down. You can't do any better than quantum mechanics. That's a very interesting result. This result's more trivial, which I alluded to when I was trying to answer Sharon's question. If there's no indeterminism in your model, it's perfectly deterministic. It has no measure, it has measurement independence. So you've got to allow some signaling, of course, to model the Singlet state, and you need 100% signaling. That's really because you've got to jump. It's sort of trivial. You've got to jump from 0 to 1, or 1 to 0 to have any signaling. And so again, though, when they're both 0, you need 100% signaling. And there's a conjecture which has been able to partially prove, but not fully prove, that in general, if you've got a model that satisfies measurement independence, you've got a complementarity relation, essentially, between the amount of signaling you need and the amount of indeterminism you need to model the Singlet state. And you also rewrite this conjecture in terms of the amount of local random bits generated in the model and the amount of signaling that's possible in the model. You can get a complementarity relation in terms of bits as well, which is nice. So I've written that down here. And what's interesting, so of course, although I didn't look at it initially because I thought measurement independence, it's sort of a bit paranoid to think about violating measurement independence, but I've come to realise it's not such a bad thing to consider. All the ingredients that go into deriving Bell inequalities, they're very plausible assumptions, so we really need to look seriously at all of them. And of course it's a good thing. But the interesting thing is you don't need a lot of measurement independence, You only have to give up 14% of measurement independence, or if you like, 14% of experimental free will, if you want to be provocative. And you can model a singlet state with a deterministic model that satisfies parameter independence. Oh. No singling. And so it's a relatively strong resource for modeling entanglement.
Question.
Yep.
Can you explain where the bound of the previous page came from of 20%? I had interpreted this one, so I rated it 20%. I would have thought, you know, if S is equal to 0 and M is equal to 0, then you're saying a lower bound on I is 20%. But on the next page...
Yes, yes, but this is for just two settings. So I just want any model which has two possible settings to choose between on either side. Okay. And so that's why it's weaker. On the next page, I'm now saying they can choose all spin correlations in the singlet state. I'm trying to model a singlet state and all correlations, not just the case where you've got the bell, clouds, and chimney hole settings of just two angles that you can flip between, as in the aspect experiment.
You keep mentioning the singlet state. Is there any difference with the other bell states?
The other bell states? Probably not. I haven't tried. Probably not. Yeah, given that, I think Turner Baker model applies equally well to any bell state. And although I was talking about the singlet state, it would be interesting to look at the DHZ state. I haven't done that either, so.
No, I just wondered why you kept saying singlet state as if there was something.
That's because I'm old. Bill used to only be about the singlet state. All right. That's why I use no signaling too. All right, I've got to get up to the time. So I'll just tell you what the model looks like. And actually, it looks close enough to the Baker model that I was able to copy something out of one of their papers and modify it a bit. It looks something very like Bell, a model that Bell played with in his paper to show it doesn't reproduce singlet state correlations. Too much noise. So we take our underlying variable to a unit 3 vector, sits somewhere on the sphere here. If we measure, Alice measures spin in the x direction, Bob measures in the y direction, and we just take our deterministic outcomes to be specified in this way. And then the only other part of the model we need to specify is what the correlation is essentially between our hidden variable and the measurement settings, and it looks like this. Bell looked briefly at a model where this thing was equal to lambda, the distribution was uniform over the sphere, was just equal to 1 on 4 pi. And he was able to show you with that model, you can't reproduce the singlet state correlations. Instead of an average product being minus A dot B, you can only get minus a third A dot B. So we do have to play around with it. But it turns out that this, and so the distribution essentially, let's see when they're equal. That's here and here. The distribution is equal on two opposing spherical sectors here, and then it's equal on the remaining two opposing spherical sectors. So the model is very simple. I'm not going to try and get a physical picture of the model. Have one. But there is such a model, and it only has that measurement. You only have to give up 14% of measurement independence to model that singlet state. That's what I talk about information properties. Because about the same time I put that model in the archive, Jonathan Barrett and Nicholas Kissan put a different deterministic model.
For clarification, is that lambda, do you essentially have a single hidden variable for both qubits in the singlet state, or do
correct.
You have two copies?
Well, they can each have a copy if you like.
But it's a perfect copy, in a sense.
There's only one, unlike the Turner Baker model, there's only one vector, not two. All right. I'm sorry, have we got to do something?
I think if you move over that,
and they'll
try to press
anyone
there.
Okay, right. Someone's going to press that. Okay. So, what have we got? So if you want to quantify giving up experimental free will, measurement independence as some sort of resource, which is always good. An excellent measure of correlation, I think, is the mutual information between the quantities that have some correlation between them, Shannon mutual information. And Barrett and Beeson used that in this context.
But
that's all.
So what about Mason? They did something very clever. They the Tony Bacon model, for those who aren't familiar with it, it's a model of the singlet state which is deterministic, satisfies measurement independence, but it allows communication between the two detectors, essentially one bit. So whichever, you probably need a preferred frame of measurement, whichever measurement's done first in some frame, that modifies a quantity which is sent to the other detector. And you can reproduce all singlet state correlations that way. Barrett and Deason were able to turn that in, that singling bit, they just made that part of their hidden variable, and and because the singling bit depended on the measurement setting of at least one of the observers, that meant the model now did not satisfy measurement independence, but suddenly there was no singling. And with their model, they were able to show essentially that the amount of correlation between lambda and the measurement settings you need in a no-singling deterministic model of the singlet state is no more than one bit. And the model I showed you, I said you need to give up 14% measurement independence. In fact, that's optimal. You have to give up at least 14% measurement independence as characterized by my measure M, that overlap, that distance, for any model of the singlet state that's deterministic and satisfies parameter independence on those singling. But it also seems to be fairly good on the information side as well. When you work out the amount of correlation, you find it's always less than about 1/15 of a bit. So it's a very small amount of correlation you need between this parameter lambda and the measurement settings, which is interesting. But further than that, I can't say much more. Right, so on to the conclusions. So really, the idea of relaxability qualities is just to put some quantifying there rather than people arguing endlessly over which assumption or which set of assumptions they want to give up with. For example, if you just want to stick to quantum mechanics, that means you don't have to give up measurement independence, you don't have to give up parameter independence, because the quantum model satisfies those. But you do have to give up determinism completely. But in retrocausal models, you like to keep signaling, no signaling, and you like to keep determinism, but you're perfectly happy to give up measurement independence and have a correlation between the source and measurement settings that is set up by some sort of backward in time propagation. So relaxability qualities are interesting in at least letting you quantify how much you have to give up of what. Also, the model of the singlet state, this model is quite interesting in that in some sense it appears to be optimal. So I won't go further into it, but there's a few generic ones. The Turner Baker model is nice, it seems optimal in one way. And so the PR boxes, if you want an indeterministic model of Bellian quality violation. And then there's further work, some of this I've been talking with Cyril about. And some of it's being written up at the moment. So you can relax other Bell inequalities, of course. You can relax certain types of Cockett, like the free will theorem by Conway and Cockett. It turns out there you can get around their argument if you allow, you have to relax measurement independence by about 5%, and their argument falls down. But the using the GZ state, in one of these sort of arguments, there's an argument due to Merman in particular, you have to give up a third of measurement independence to model that. And similarly, to obtain maximum violation of the Bell, Clausthal and Shimini-Hulk inequality, all the way up to 4 on the right-hand side, you have to give up a third of measurement independence as well, if you want a no-singling deterministic model. So, I think I've put down here, I sort of wonder whether you have to give up any more than a third, no matter what. Another interesting thing that would be worth doing, it's just a little harder, instead of relaxing determinism and measurement, how would you call it, parameter independence, you could simply just relax the degree of factorisability, or you could relax outcome independence and parameter independence. It just turns out it's a little harder because you don't have nice convicts and linear things involved. But that would certainly be interesting to do. All right, that's all there is to the talk. Thank you very much.
His claim is that his theorem applies to quantum mechanics itself. It's not just the hidden variables, and not particularly just the deterministic ones and so on.
Yeah. First thing is Bell, as far as that all violation, all Bell equality derivations end up making assumptions equivalent to or stronger than, say, a factorizability assumption, or which I assume is what you mean by your stochastic assumption.
Yeah.
Okay, if there is a factorizable model if and only if there is a deterministic parameter independent model. That you can prove that fairly easily. So there's no real difference in proving the Bell inequality by just motivating a factorizability condition or by motivating determinism.
Well, the point is that it applies to infinite theories also. So, I mean, the Bell is doing this in order.
Yes, that's true.
To make sure that, okay, it's not the indeterministic feature of quantum mechanics that is important.
No, but it's not the indeterministic feature, either, because I just told you to get the Bell inequality, the assumptions you make. And fine, sure, Bell, Clausewitz, Shipley-Hold inequality, for example, papers by Fine in the 80s showed if anything satisfies Bell inequality, that inequality, there must be a deterministic parameter independent model for it that satisfies minimum independence. So there's no real gain. Where I think there is a gain is by instead of relaxing determinism, because as you're saying, you're quite happy to give up some determinism in line of the Bell inequality, one could perhaps relax outcome independence instead, which is part of the factorizability condition.
Well, so I guess what I'm confused is that giving up determinism doesn't change anything. And that's sort of
what Well, it does. That's what quantum mechanics does. It gives up determinism, you can model the Siemens state, you can model everything.
Well, but according to Bell, it's still non local.
That could be how you define non-local, I guess.
I'm going to talk about this this afternoon, maybe.
I agree. For example, I don't like the term quantum non-locality. I abhor it, and other people like it. But for me, it seems almost a tautology to say quantum mechanics is non-local because it violates the Bell inequality. You've got to think what goes into Bell inequality, and it is more than locality, I would say. More than locality.
Let me try. So I'm not happy to wait for this afternoon. So I'm confused by something similar. And maybe it's just a question of terminology. But if I had a theory that violated determinism but only did it locally, right, so at every wing I could have as much indeterminism as I want, it would not help me violate a Bell inequality.
Good. Now I'm confused now. What you mean locally? Because let's have a look at the PR box. For me, that's local, okay? Because there's no signaling involved. So for me, local means no signaling. You have to tell me exactly what you mean by deterministic locally.
I guess that's
a fair use terminology. The PR box, it uses indeterminism, but it's no signaling.
My point is that there's, I think in most presentations, like for example, in Fine's paper, the language that's used is even giving up determinism does not help you violate the Bell inequality. I think that's a standard way of thinking about things.
Well, that's just incorrect because the quantum mechanics gives up determinism and violates the Bell inequality.
But the point is that it's not merely the giving up of the determinism, it's a particular kind of indeterminism.
Oh, I agree.
So
right, so yes.
It would be more appropriate to say it's giving up outcome independence, which is what allows quantum mechanics of violability. So what I wonder is whether a better terminology would somehow be your first thing is a violation of outcome independence, your second thing is a violation of parameter dependence.
Yes, yes.
The third thing of but you seem to say that that's not what you're doing. That the first
thing I'm quite happy to look at that. I'd be quite happy to look at, instead of relaxing determinism, start with outcome independence and relax that. That's just mathematically, it's more difficult. So I think that would be quite a logical way to proceed. And another reason that it's a logical way to proceed is, as I mentioned, I was trying to answer Shana's question, the measures of indeterminism seem I have are not completely independent of each other. If you have a certain amount of indeterminism, that restricts the amount of singling you can have. So that would be fine. But this, you seem to be making the point, which is quite valid, that merely having a model that relaxes determinism just because it's indeterministic doesn't mean you'll violate valid equality. But I'm just looking at all models that I'm saying something about all models. There is one model with that degree with a degree of indeterminism at least, which I can write down explicitly, which will give that degree of valid equality violation. And if you want your valid equality, your relaxed valid equality to say something about all models having a given degree of indeterminism, of course it will include models that don't violate, it will include the models that will. Up and down in that. So it's not saying something about every model with a degree of, certain degree of IS and M. It's saying if your model has that, it falls into this class, a class that can only violate Bell inequalities by up to this much. Doesn't mean that they necessarily will.
Okay. So I would just say that the pertinent feature of that model wouldn't be its indeterminism, but something about the non-locality of its indeterminism. So I think it might be a terminological issue. So I just want to say that I think what you're doing is perfectly legitimate. And I'll talk more about some of these issues this afternoon. But the question I have, so your definitions of your three quantities, two of them are asymmetric and they talk about, what happens to volume and hours or vice versa or something. Whereas your M quantity is symmetric.
Yes.
Do you think that possibly in some sense is giving more power to what you're measuring by M, which is why you can get away with smaller changes in M? Does that make sense?
No, I don't think it does. You can also define a local measurement independence, if you like, an M1 and an M2, and you can define the asymmetric signaling, Alice to Bob, Bob to Alice, and you can define local degrees of indeterminism in the models that I get for those inequalities. It's always I1 equals I2 equals I, S1 equals S2 equals I, M1 equals M2. So you're right, the way I've presented there, you can make everything look asymmetric and then take a maximum over that. But that's also another interesting question. If one measurement's done before the other, then of course you're happy to allow signaling one way, but not the other. So it would be interesting to derive some sort of relaxed Bell inequality, just allows causal inferences, but not retrocausal inferences.
So the other more technical question. Well, I just wonder about non-maximally entangled sets because, they can be surprisingly hard to,
I haven't at all tried, but the Turner Bacon model, you've got about 2 bits of communication, it looks like, for non-maximally entangled states of 2 qubits. So, quite possibly you'll have to go up here. It's an unlikely conjecture that I might claim you never have to give up anymore. One-third measurement independence. It's quite possible because as you increase in and choose the right states, it increases the dimension.
And when you said one-third, did you mean one-third of two? Or
one-third of two, yes.
Okay, so why don't we get Cyril to switch over now and we can field just one question, a quick question, while the switch is on.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're plugging.
So the main question is, sounded like in the model you had just one single hidden variable kind of corresponding to just one system.
It corresponds to the source.
So if there's just this one variable that doesn't factorize into sort of 2 qubits, in what sense is this a local model? Because they're both measuring sort of the same thing.
Oh, okay. Yes, question before. Just think of them as H systems.